Y'all ready? Y'all ready?
Yeah.
Let's go. Come on.
Tiger Rag Radio is on the air.
Let's crank this thing up.
We're statewide breaking down the latest happenings with LSU Athletics.
This is us.
Hear from the coaches.
What's required and asked of you to represent our university.
The players.
Let's have fun and we working, baby. That's it, baby.
The recruits.
Show some passion and some heart.
And those who cover the Fighting Tigers of LSU and the SEC.
We're all in to finish what we've started.
It's 2 hours of nonstop LSU talk.
What a privilege. I mean, you get to represent LSU.
Tiger Rag Radio is brought to you by Cummins. Cummins creates power solutions that the world depends on. Louisiana Beef Industry Council. Boudreaux's Electrical Services. Sunshine Quality Solutions. Super Chevy Dealers. And Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. Get ready to talk Tigers with producer Andre Champagne and our host, Todd Horn, Jeff Palermo, and Glenn Gildo.
Two great players that are better people than they are players.
This is Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another edition, the final edition of Tiger Rag Radio for 2025. This is Jeff Palermo inside the Super Chevy Dealer Studios, along with Tiger Rag Executive Editor Todd Horn. Glenn Gilbo, the editor for Tiger Rag, will join us via the phone here for this first couple of segments, as he was down in New Orleans, and Andre Champagne is our producer tonight once again. Thanks again for everyone listening here on Tiger Rag Radio and for your support all throughout the 2025 season. Got a good show lined up for you. Michael Bonnet, LSU Sports Information Director, will join us later on in the hour. Nick Bromberg from Yahoo Sports, who covers college football. And it will be an interesting conversation with Nick because he's a bit of a transfer portal guru. So, of course, with the transfer portal window opening on Friday, that, I think, is where most of the LSU fan base's interest are at. And then we'll hear from the voice of the Lady Tigers, Patrick Wright, as LSU women's basketball tips off SEC play on New Year's Day against the Kentucky Wildcats. But, Todd, Happy New Year. Thanks for holding the fort down the last couple of weeks that I have not been here, and I'm excited to be back and looking forward to a good show tonight.
Well, I'm glad to have you back, and I think probably Mr. Gilbo deserves most of the credit for holding the fort down because he did the heavy lifting as far as the mainline hosting went. But, hey, I was hoping that you or Andre slash Luke or maybe even Gilbo when he comes on would have some old Eng Zine. Can we play some old Eng Zine? Because I'm kind of I'm in the end of the year party mode right now.
Yeah. Maybe we could cook that up. Well, Glenn was down in New Orleans. Andre, do we got Glenn yet? Is he?
Yeah, he's here.
All right, let's bring in Glenn. Glenn, who spent the day in New Orleans. No, not getting ready for the new year, actually doing some business down there, doing some work. A very interesting day as you have six members of this LSU staff that are also on Ole Miss's staff for the time being until the Rebels are eliminated from the college football playoffs. And, of course, today the media had an opportunity to speak with Charlie Weiss Jr., who is LSU's offensive coordinator, and for, again, the time being, he is the Rebels' offensive coordinator and as well. Glenn, what was today like? Very strange, I would imagine. Here you are. You're talking to Charlie Weiss, who's going to be calling plays on Thursday night when Ole Miss takes on Georgia. But yet, he's also being paid by LSU.
Exactly. And I'm still in New Orleans. I'm going to be here for a while longer. We have a media party, which, you know, it's my duty to go to. I don't want to be irresponsible and not go. And then there's some other writers who asked me to go out to eat with them. So I have to be responsible and do that. So I'll be here till about 3 a.m., I'm sure. But,
hey, am I going to have to pay for any of this?
You usually don't, Todd. So
I'm asking right now.
Jim will take care of it. It was a great day, man. A lot of these media days are awesome because you get to talk to everybody. You know, everybody is available because the schools certainly don't do that anymore. But Charlie Weiss Jr. was a great interview. There really wasn't many Ole Miss people talking to him. It was me and Rabelais and a couple other LSU writers and maybe one or two Ole Miss TV guys. Also talked to Kevin Smith, the running backs coach. He was a great interview. And talked to Trinidad Chambliss, the quarterback who may come to LSU. But very, very interesting day. As Charlie Weiss Jr. said, it's pretty weird being a coach at two schools at the same time.
Well, Glenn, it's really and truly unprecedented. Like, it's never happened like this before. What did Charlie say about that?
Well, he said that at the end of the day, he gets on the phone and starts talking to the other LSU coaches about recruiting and getting everything lined up for signing day and what direction they're going when the portal starts on January 2nd. He made it very clear that, he hasn't talked to any players about transferring. I mean, he is talking to recruits from high school, but he made it clear he's not talking to any players about transferring yet. And I asked him if there were guardrails up when Ole Miss decided to bring the guys back, and he said there's no guardrails because they know we respect the program. And I think that's true to an extent. I mean, these guys have been there a long time. But I thought the funniest thing that Charlie said was that the topic turned to Lane Kiffin, and he said he's the greatest offensive genius he's ever been around. And this is the son of a 3-time Super Bowl winning offensive coordinator, Charlie Weiss Sr. with New England. Now, yeah, he had Tom Brady, but still, I thought that was pretty funny.
Hey, is there any reason in particular, and I know this is off tangent, but why the Ole Miss Rebels arrived in New Orleans on a New England Patriots plane?
You got me, man.
That was weird.
That's a good story.
Yeah, that was weird.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I wondered if it had anything to do with Weiss or not. But anyway, do you talk to Chambliss today too? And you've got stories on both Weiss and Chambliss up on TigerRag.com right now. They're getting a lot of activity. What did Chambliss say that was particularly interesting or revealing?
Well, it was funny because some friends of mine who were at the whole Trinidad interview said in the beginning he didn't say anything about the NCAA suit. He just, he just kind of brushed it off and had little to say. But by the time I got over there after I was finished talking to Charlie Weiss, there was only a couple of guys there, me and Jeff Duncan from the Picayune. And he started talking a little bit more about it, as you can read in the story. He, he thinks there's going to be a decision. He's going to get a decision between, in January in time to enter the portal if he indeed does that. And then, he talked about Tom Mars, hiring Tom, who's been a guest on Tiger Egg Radio. He's a noted sports attorney, and he feels strongly about his case. So he thinks he's going to get the waiver. There are some national media people that think he's not, though, like Pete Thamel. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
So the issue there is that right now the NCAA offices are closed for the holidays. So there's no way he's going to get any type of feedback from them, much less a decision, until January 2nd. Or actually, probably January 2nd, right, which is the day the portal opens. Right, which is the day the portal opens. So let's assume that Georgia beats the heck out of Ole Miss tomorrow night or on New Year's night, like I think they're probably going to do. It's possible that we may have some activity in the transfer portal from Chambliss as early as Friday or Saturday.
Well, I guess he could enter the portal on the condition that he gets a senior year. he said hopefully he'll hear something Friday when they open, but they could stretch things. I mean, he said before the playoff game against Tulane that he thought he was going to hear from him within a few days. So you never know with the NCAA, they tend to take a long time. But if he doesn't get the clearance before January 16th, maybe they could give him another waiver because there's not another window before the 26 season starts.
Yeah, I think it's interesting what you said, though. Maybe he can enter the portal even though he doesn't have his waiver yet. And I mean, you know, maybe he could enter the NFL draft and get drafted, and if he didn't like where he landed, he could come back, you know? I don't know. That seems to be what's going on in the NCAA right now, but more on that later. We're going to talk more in the second segment and play some of the actual interview that you had with Weiss. And one of the subjects that he talked about was what he and Lane look for in a quarterback. And he named Chambliss in that, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, and Jackson Dart. And it was interesting. He said they don't try to fit the quarterback to the system. They adjust the system to the quarterback. So, you know, they watched film of Trinidad at his Division II school, Ferris State in Michigan, and then molded the offense around that. And, I mean, it's really amazing how well he did so quickly this year after coming from Division II. You know, he may well have done very well at a lot of places, but I think you do have to give Lane and Charlie Weiss credit for getting such a good season out of him.
Yeah, and I meant to ask you about this, but what does Chambliss himself say why he thinks he has a strong case to get his waiver granted by the NCAA?
Well, he says, you know, he only played 3 years, which T.J. Finley can't say that for sure. But, you know, he said he had the typical redshirt year, his first year as a freshman. And then the next year he didn't play because of a medical redshirt. I think there's some people that think maybe he wasn't hurt. He just didn't play. But
he claims he had tonsillitis. He claims
right,
he had tonsillitis.
Exactly.
And heart palpitations, too.
But,
right,
but from
and
what
he's got medical records and so forth for that.
And I think when you talk about the national media, I just want to put this out there, just so our listeners are not clear, what the national media has been suggesting is that Ferris State is not playing along with these reasons on why he didn't play his first true season when he did appear in two games that year. But Ferris State is saying, well, he didn't play because there were other guys that were better than him. It wasn't because of these medical issues.
But Tom Mars.
Yeah, and I've
go ahead, Glenn.
And, you know, I've seen it both ways. I've seen it that he played no games in 22 and then that he played two games in 22. But, you know, there's been a lot of guys that have got that other year who played, you know, like 5 years or 4 years, well, you know. So it's really weird that the precedent is not exactly being held to.
Well, and you know what's interesting to me? If he really does have medical documentation to back up his claims,
it should be a slam dunk case.
No brainer, right?
But you never know with the NCAA. So
interesting. Right. Interesting.
Yeah. Hey, before we get on to you mentioned Todd, we're going to hear a little more from Charlie Weiss. I did want to ask you, Glenn, while you had a chance to speak with Kevin Smith. Did he? I'm not sure exactly where that interview went, Glenn, but did you guys bring up the awkwardness here of this with Frank Wilson being such a beloved coach, running backs coach here at LSU, and now Kevin coming in and replacing him?
You know, I didn't ask him about Frank, but I did ask him, you know, I said, well, I guess that wasn't an ultimatum from Lane, you know, because that was the story at the time. He said, get on the plane to LSU or you can't come. And Kevin Smith said apparently that wasn't true because Kevin wasn't on that plane and he didn't agree to go to LSU until like weeks later.
Okay.
So that was some myth reporting there. But no, he's very excited about following Lane. You know, I think if Lane was going to coach at University of Alaska, some of these guys would be going with him.
All right, let's get into a little bit more of what Charlie Weiss had to say today at Media Day of the Sugar Bowl. We'll do that. This is Tiger Rag Radio. You can get us on all your podcasts, wherever you get your podcast as well. Also, check us out on YouTube as well. Check out the Tiger Rag YouTube channel. We'll have more of Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio when we come back.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to... Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with five available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious... With multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability.
Nice.
Making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. My brother and I grow rice, soybeans, and raise crawfish on our farm in Evangeline Parish. For a fourth-generation farmer like myself, Louisiana Farm Bureau is as much a part of my life as checking traps or harvesting rice. Our organization is more than 145,000 members strong, and we've been around for more than 100 years. The Louisiana Farm Bureau spans generations, and we want you to join our family.
Visit LAFarmBureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
How you doing? This is Snoop Dogg.
Tiger Rag. Tiger Rag Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, you are tuned in.
Talk LSU sports, interviews, opinions, and your calls around the Tiger Nation.
Baton Rouge was the life for me. Home of the LSU Tigers.
Now more Tiger Rag Radio.
Hey, we love to score and get highlights and championships and play to win.
Tiger Rag Radio.
Back here on Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealers Studio, Jeff Palermo along with Todd Horn, and one more segment here with Tiger Rag editor Glenn Gill before he spends the night partying and eating chips and doing whatever your reporters do at these media parties involving a
bogey. I think it's going to involve cigars and whiskey.
That's right.
I've seen you at these media parties, Jeff Palermo.
Yeah. On my best behavior, mind you. All right, let's get into a little bit of what Charlie Weiss had to say today. You know, we heard after that win over Tulane in the first round game of the college football playoff, Pete Golding talking about Charlie Weiss and really touting the job that he did developing the game plan for that contest against the Green Wave and calling the plays. And today, good questions here being asked by Glenn Gilbert and fellow reporters about Lane Kiffin's involvement with the offense, even though Charlie Weiss is the main play caller. Let's go ahead and play this first soundbite.
He's extremely involved in the process. You know, a lot of it is more maybe, hey, before the series,
right.
You know, some of those sorts of things. Or he's just got such an unbelievable feel for the game, too, where he's got moments where, you know, he sees something, recognizes something, and says, hey, Charlie, get to this, all of that stuff right there. So it's certainly, you know, a collaborative effort for sure. Number one is leadership, you know, finding a guy who's the right leader that can, you know, in the SEC.
All right, so there you heard. We'll get to that second soundbite there in a second. But there you heard Charlie Weiss talking about Lane Kiffin and kind of what he does. Like most head coaches, I would think, especially with an offensive background that Lane Kiffin has, he's going to make suggestions and so forth, and he certainly has a big play. But I think a lot of people were, you know, that – before we really understood this relationship between Lane Kiffin and Charlie Weiss, thought that Lane was the one calling the plays, but it really is Charlie Weiss calling the plays and then Lane intervening and suggesting when he feels it's appropriate.
Yeah, and you know, I had talked to some Mississippi writers about that like in November, and they thought that, or some of them, they weren't sure, but they thought Charlie might have just taken over full control this year. But Charlie told me, right before that soundbite, that he's been calling all the plays since 2022 when he first got back to Ole Miss, and that when he was at Florida Atlantic with Lane, he called all the plays every year except this first year there, where Lane was still kind of calling them. So this guy is very active, you know, as the play caller, and he also had a pretty big role. I mean, he wasn't calling plays, but when Lane was calling plays as Alabama's OC, he was just an analyst, but he was kind of an advanced analyst, and he was very close with Lane and how they worked with Jake Coker and Jalen Hurts, and then Lane was impressed enough to make him his OC at Florida Atlantic. So, and this guy is only 32, and he looks about 25.
Yeah.
And you know, he seems really, really sharp. So I think we're in for some real interesting times at LSU with this staff.
And you know what? The thing that jumps out at me, especially when you talk about Charlie Weiss Jr. the way you're talking about him, is, and listening to that clip, is he really appreciates Lane Kiffin's overall understanding of offensive football today, which is why he's recognized as the offensive mind that he's recognized. And whether Kiffin's calling the plays or Weiss is, as you say, and I'm sure Weiss is, I think back to what Ed Ogeron said a couple of weeks ago, and that is that Kiffin is an offensive savant, and he sort of sees – he's the only person he's ever seen, Kiffin, that can see the field of all 22 players at one time in slow motion from the sideline and be able to make adjustments on the fly. And I think that's just an incredible combination if that's true.
Oh, yeah. Well, I can remember when Lane was the offensive coordinator at Alabama, they would have the sideline camera on him, and they would show it usually after a touchdown. But Lane, like when the quarterback had barely got the snap, they had the double screen, and Lane is jumping up and down on the sideline pointing to the open receiver. You know, I mean, he saw it before the quarterback did. So he really is to offense in the college game what Nick was to defense.
Well, speaking of quarterbacks, this is what Charlie Weiss had to say today about what they look for in a quarterback to run this offense.
Number one is leadership, you know, finding a guy who's the right leader that can, you know, in the SEC, obviously, you're going to be in some battles. So having a guy that the players want to play for and want to play with is extremely important to me. And I think those are some traits that I've seen with Jackson, you know, with Trinidad, and the guys really love their play style and how they play the game and all that right there. So I think leadership is certainly the first thing that comes to mind. I think the next thing is really just intelligence to be able to handle our system and do all the different things that we do. So, you know, having a good football mind and being able to pick up all the pieces of the system and be able to think like us to get on the same wavelength is really important. And then obviously you got to have the traits too.
And that's good stuff there from Charlie Weiss. Glenn, we're going to have to let you go. We'll get you to your big night on the town, but look forward to your coverage of the Sugar Bowl and look forward to transfer portal open window time. Should be a lot of fun. Thanks, Glenn.
Yeah, and well, I'll have a feature up on Kevin Smith in the morning from our interview today. And then there'll be more from Charlie as we get going into the game on Thursday. So
cool.
Thanks a lot, guys.
All right, we'll take a break. Sports Information Director Michael Bonnet when we come back here on Tiger Rag Radio.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice,
making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. While I'm a fourth generation rice and soybean grower, you don't have to be a farmer to be a Louisiana Farm Bureau member. Membership has its benefits, from discounts on car seats, hotel rooms, and rental cars, to access to insurance you can count on to be there when you need, plus a whole lot more. We're 145,000 members strong, and we want you to join the Louisiana Farm Bureau family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Let's go! Back to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Back here on Tiger Rag Radio, Jeff Palermo along with the executive editor for Tiger Rag Magazine, Todd Horn. We are working hard tonight from the Super Chevy Dealer Studios, unlike our colleague Glenn Gilbo, who's probably got that margarita in his hand by now, Todd.
He's a whiskey guy.
That's right. I keep forgetting. You want to hear a little more from Charlie Weiss? You want to keep that going
So the most interesting things to me were the last clip that we just ended with, where they were describing what they look for in a quarterback.
You want to play that clip again for those that just might be joining us?
Yeah, sure. I'll play it again.
Yeah, go ahead, Andre.
Number one is leadership, you know, finding a guy who's the right leader that can, you know, in the SEC, obviously, you're going to be in some battles. So having a guy that the players want to play for and want to play with is extremely important to me. And I think those are some traits that I've seen with Jackson, you know, with Trinidad, and the guys really love their play style and how they play the game and all that right there. So I think leadership is certainly the first thing that comes to mind. I think the next thing is really just intelligence to be able to handle our system and do all the different things that we do. So, you know, having a good football mind and being able to pick up all the pieces of the system and be able to think like us to get on the same wavelength is really important. And then obviously you got to have the traits too.
So, Jeff, if we can now sort of tie that one into clip four, where he's talking, Weiss is talking about how their system is molded to a quarterback, and there's a method to my madness here.
We've always molded the system, you know, to the quarterback and not the other way around. It's not like a cookie-cutter guy that you look for. It's, hey, who's the best one that we have, and let's make an offense that works for him.
So LSU right now is in a situation where they have one quarterback, Michael Van Buren, who is a scholarship player on the roster, and they're not even sure right now, even, you know, if he's gonna stay. So it's very possible that Kiffin and Weiss right now are gonna have to go into the portal and sign two, maybe even three quarterbacks. And I think that's very insightful information from him, that they do have specific qualities that they look for, but at the same time, they're open to applying their offense to quarterbacks with different traits. I think that really opens it up a little bit. It's not like you're looking for somebody who can do X, Y, Z. You're looking for those specific leadership qualities, and their traits can be molded around whatever.
Yeah, leadership and football IQ sound like the two big ones.
Yeah, and another interesting point, too, I heard this from, I think it was Kiffin, talking about Chambliss early in the season. He, at Ole Miss, you know, he didn't start until I think the second or third game whenever Austin Simmons got hurt. And Chambliss did not start the season well at all at Ole Miss. He was messing up a lot, supposedly in camp, wasn't adapting to the offense. And I asked Kiffin about that, and he said, well, you know, you just have to stick with a quarterback when you recognize these qualities and traits in them. He didn't say that, but that's what I see him saying now. And just stick with them, and then they come around, and suddenly you have greatness on your hands. And Chambliss has truly been great this year.
He's been fantastic. I think one of the biggest stories of the college football season, and I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued by what they could potentially do Thursday night when they take on Georgia. I'm really fascinated to see, especially if this is a close game. You know, it was going up against Tulane and just cruising through the Green Wave defense on their first offensive drive was one thing, right? That's, you know, that probably put everyone at ease, and they just kind of did their thing against Tulane. What happens now in this game against the Bulldogs, and when it's going to be a pressure situation, and Georgia's going to show you a lot of different stuff, and how are they going to react, and this and that. So it'll be fascinating to see how this Ole Miss team responds to all of that.
Well, I agree with you. It's going to be fascinating, but I don't hold out much hope for Ole Miss. I think Ole Miss, in this situation, going back to what we talked about last segment with Kiffin and how he is an offensive savant and sees things on the field that other people doesn't see, and how he contributes to the play calling, even though he's not the person calling the plays, but contributes to each drive and, you know, the entire flow of the game. I think Ole Miss is really going to miss him in this game. Georgia is a lot better of a team than they were 5 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago, whenever Ole Miss and Georgia played in Athens. This team defensively is as good as, you know, they've just made tremendous strides over that time period. You know, Ole Miss wasn't able to force Georgia to punt in that last game. And offensively, Georgia is a lot better than they were. I'm not sure that Ole Miss is going to have what it takes to stay on the field with them for a full 60 minutes in the Sugar Bowl in New Orleans on New Year's night.
Let's just hear a couple other things here from Charlie. We kind of hit on this before we close out this segment, just about the these will be the first couple of sound bites here, Andre, just about the difficulty of trying to basically handle two jobs at once. We'll start off with that Charlie one cut, Andre.
It's been extremely emotional. I mean, it's been very difficult, just, you know, having to make these, you know, difficult decisions. But at the same time, obviously, you know, you got, you know, the playoffs, you know, even during, you know, like, yeah, the Egg Bowl, the playoffs, all this thing kind of just all spiraled and hit really quickly. But I'm really just blessed to be in the position I'm in to get to coach this team and to get to do great things later on, too. And so as difficult and emotional it's been, I feel very fortunate, too.
All right, let's hear the second one here before we close out this segment.
I don't think it's been a distraction this year. I feel like, you know, I've been able to fully, you know, pour in and make sure that, you know, we got the right game plan and got the right things to do offensively and still meet with the players, you know, on the same sort of schedule. And then, you know, at nighttime, you know, just got to be able to flip the job and, you know, do some recruiting stuff on the other side with LSU. So it's been, you know, strange. But, no, I don't feel like it's been a distraction at all. Our players, they're a very mature group, too. And so I credit them a lot.
I just don't buy it, Todd. I think this has been a huge distraction. Again, it was one thing to go up against Georgia, and I don't know how much he's been really involved in the LSU stuff, but I just find, considering how much these coaches prepare during a given week, now it's probably helped Ole Miss's case here that they've played two teams so far in the postseason that they also faced in the regular season. So not necessarily as much preparation as if they were playing Oregon or someone like that this week. But I still can't imagine that this is easy. I mean, this is why Nick Saban didn't have Lane Kiffin be the offensive coordinator when he was taking the Florida Atlantic job.
Yeah, but by the same token, the only chance Ole Miss has of staying on the field is having those guys down there, LSU coaches down there. So
yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see. It'll be a fascinating game. It'll be a fascinating 2 days here with quarterfinals beginning tomorrow night, New Year's Eve. So let's take a break. More coming up of Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealers Studio. We'll be back after this.
And we're back with Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Back here on Tiger Rag Radio, Jeff Palermo along with the executive editor for Tiger Rag Magazine, Todd Horn. And again, if you're just joining us, want to hear the whole show, we had Glenn on talking a lot of Charlie Weiss, who spoke today at Sugar Bowl Media Day. You can check out a podcast version of the show anywhere you get your podcast. Also, it is available on YouTube as well shortly after the show airs tonight is when we get off the air at 8 o'clock. The quarterfinals of the college football playoffs begin New Year's Eve night. Miami and Ohio State, 40.5 is the point total. Obviously, we're anticipating a pretty low-scoring game here. Miami just squeaking out a win against Texas A&M. And even though it was not a very high-scoring game when they beat the Aggies 10-3, I found it a very compelling game as Miami really hung in there and then got a touchdown in the second half, took the lead, and had to hold on for the victory. But what do you think here? Can Miami do it again, or is Ohio State just too good, Todd?
I actually believe that Miami's defensive line and their overall defense, based on what they did against Texas A&M and how they finished the season late in the year, is going to provide a pretty stiff challenge to Ohio State, especially because Saban has not looked good offensively, you know, their quarterback in the last few weeks. So I think it's going to be a challenge for Ohio State to go against that Miami offense. I give Miami a more than a good chance in this game. I think it's going to be very competitive.
I'll say it's going to be competitive, but I don't think that I don't think that Miami is going to win strictly because of how good Ohio State's defense is. And the only teams that have beat Ohio State are the teams that haven't turned the ball over. And Miami's had a problem turning the ball over.
And that's a great point, Luke. And let me tell you, let me take this a step further. into what you're saying. I think that if Miami has to throw the ball, if they cannot run the ball effectively, they're in trouble as far as that goes. But to Jeff's point, the over-under is, what, 40?
It is extremely low, I think.
40 and a half.
Yeah, so, that's, I mean, very low. I think what you said is if Miami has any offensive success at all on the ground, then it's really going to be a game.
Three games, of course, on New Year's Day, Oregon and Texas Tech. Texas Tech's big marquee wins, two victories over BYU and Utah. I don't know. I know they got a lot of talent. I know they've bought a – or one guy's bought a huge roster in this, and they got a lot of talent. But I'm just curious to see now that they really go up against a legitimate top 10 team how they fare against Oregon.
So I hope, all right, now this is the fan in me coming out. I really hope that Texas Tech kicks Oregon's butt. Okay?
Why is that?
Because I am sick of Oregon, all right? I'm sick of their uniforms. I'm sick of Dan Lanning, and I'm sick of them making the college football playoffs, it seems like, every year now. I realize it's only been a few in a row, but still, to me, what they did in the second half against James Madison is sinful. You know, they were just railroading them, running over them, and they just basically sat down and quit in the second half. And I hope they get just whipped for that reason. I just didn't like that at all.
Yeah, I still don't know which one to pick. I mean, I think the line is 1.5 right now in Texas.
Two and a half, Oregon.
Wow, okay. So I would probably – I'm leaning more towards Oregon just because of the coaching. You know, they've been in the playoffs before. They've had that experience. Last year, I think, left a bad taste in their mouth how they were the number one seed, got, you know, killed by Ohio State. I think this year they're looking to make a statement. I don't think they really have the team to necessarily win it all, but I think they'll – probably beat a Texas Tech team that really hasn't had to really fight adversity as far as this season, I would say. I mean, most of their games have been blowouts. Without their quarterback, they obviously lost. That was their lone loss, right?
To Arizona State.
Right,
So they lost Arizona State by 4.
So I'll go with the Ducks.
So with Texas Tech, just curious, what are your guys' opinion of Joey McGuire? I mean, he's not, you know, his background is not –
Yeah, it's different, but it's – I mean, they've won. But and usually it's kind of different because, you know, Texas Tech or the Big 12 just in general usually beats up on each other. This year it's been kind of different, you know, where they've had not only, you know, Texas Tech, but they've also had, you know, a BYU team that's come close to making it. So I think, you know, that says a little something about what they're building over there. But, I mean, sure, when you have the money to build a roster, it makes it kind of hard for you not to find that talent.
So before we move forward, do you guys think that both Ole Miss and Oregon are going to pay a price for having played those group of five teams in the first round?
No.
I don't think so.
I think it helps you a little bit. I think for Oregon, I think you feel – or excuse me, especially I think for Ole Miss's perspective, I think you felt good considering that was your first college football playoff game. You were able to kind of basically dip your toe in the water. And I think you should probably feel, and now you get to play Georgia again, I think you probably feel comfortable in this, even though you don't have Lane. Where for Oregon, as you mentioned in the second half, they were just like, okay, they lost interest in that game pretty quick. So,
I do think it's going to be more defensive game for this.
What I think is a big crime is that Texas Tech has its best season ever in college football history. And they don't get to host a college football playoff game. I think a college football playoff game in Lubbock, Texas would be just insane. It would be absolutely insane environment.
Maybe they should just bring the horse rider over to...
Instead, they're playing in Miami, which is you're going to lose everything. All right, well, we got a couple more games to get to. Alabama, Indiana, Ole Miss, Georgia. We kind of talked a little bit already about the Rebels, Bulldogs. We'll talk Indiana, Alabama, Rose Bowl when we come back here on Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
I'm Richard Funtno, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation.
For more than 100 years, Louisiana Farm Bureau has been the voice of Louisiana agriculture. Louisiana Farm Bureau advocates on behalf of all the farmers and ranchers across our great state. What that really means is we advocate for you to ensure we have the safest, most abundant, and affordable food supply in the world. Louisiana Farm Bureau is 145,000 members strong, and we want you to join the Louisiana Farm Bureau family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
We now return to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
All right, last segment of hour number one. Coming up in the second hour, Nick Bromberg from Yahoo Sports will join us. Looking forward to that conversation as we dive deep into the transfer portal. Friday and really the next couple weeks are going to be absolutely fascinating. I know it's been discouraging from LSU fans' perspective to see all these players jump into the transfer portal or announce that they're going into transfer portal. Well, the door swings the other way starting on Friday, and as we watch Lane Kiffin go to work. So look forward to hearing Nick's thoughts on that and the whole process. But we do have the quarterfinals of the college football playoffs to entertain us New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. And when it comes to the Rose Bowl, I'm going to kind of take your same your same opinion of Oregon, and I'm going to shift it to Indiana. I hope Alabama – I'm tired of Nick Sirianni. I'm tired of hearing about how they're the greatest college football team ever. I'm Fernando Mendoza maniaed out. I hope Alabama beats them by 3 touchdowns. How about that?
That's crazy. That's just crazy.
Why is it crazy, Andre?
Before I express my opinion on that, Jeff, this is the first time, I think this is interesting, this is the first meeting ever between these two schools.
Yes.
It's also the first time Indiana's ever played a football game as the number one team in the country.
Wow.
So,
that's interesting.
Yeah.
And, I did not know that. That's the other thing I don't like about Indiana. I give Indiana a lot of credit for going to Oregon and winning that game. And I also give them credit for in most of their games this season. I mean, I know they struggled against Penn State, but Penn State actually finished the season off pretty strong considering everything that they've been going through.
Did you watch that bowl game?
Against Clemson?
Yeah.
That was a great game to take a Sunday nap after Christmas.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Especially if you didn't want to get nauseated.
But still, they won the game, and they actually did finish off. I think they won 4 in a row to finish off the season. So you went to Happy Valley and you pulled off a win. But I just kind of want to see them get a dose of reality. I kind of feel like during these two seasons, and I give them a lot of credit because they've come out of nowhere and they become this team and this and that. But they haven't had a – I know, and they played Ohio State in the Big Ten. I know I'm giving all these dang exceptions, but it seems like during the season they miss out on all these other teams, especially last year. And I don't know. I would love to see Alabama. I thought Alabama received too much criticism for getting into the college football playoff just because you lost to a really good team and you didn't play very well in a 13th game where most schools are not playing 13 games.
I was just going to make the point that I believe at least this is the weakest Alabama team there's been in so long. And that comes
from
the offense.
They can't run the ball.
That's the key right there. Right. That's and if Alabama pedigree is going to pounce on the Cinderella story if they can somehow manufacture enough offense because I think Alabama's going to provide Mendoza with a lot to think about defensively.
Okay,
that's fair. I would probably agree with that. Their defense is very good.
Georgia, Ole Miss, and we all like Georgia in that one.
Georgia.
In the end,
I like Georgia big.
I'd love to see Ole Miss win.
I want LSU coaches back in
Baton Rouge. How much does that cost LSU?
A lot of money.
If all I can tell you is that if Ole Miss wins the national championship, LSU owes Lane Kiffin $750,000 more.
Wow.
right, let's we'll take a break. Hey, coming up, Nick Bromberg from Yahoo Sports. Looking forward to that interview. More coming up here on Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Y'all ready? Y'all ready?
Yeah.
Let's go. Come on.
Tiger Rag Radio is on the air.
Come on, let's crank this thing up.
We're statewide, breaking down the latest happenings with LSU athletics.
This is us.
Hear from the coaches.
What's required and asked of you to represent our university.
The players.
We're having fun and we're working, baby. That's it, man.
The recruits.
Show some passion and some heart.
And those who cover the Fighting Tigers of LSU and the SEC.
We're all in to finish what we've started.
It's 2 hours of nonstop LSU talk.
What a privilege. I mean, you get to represent LSU.
Tiger Rag Radio is brought to you by Cummins. Cummins creates power solutions that the world depends on. Louisiana Beef Industry Council. Boudreaux's Electrical Services. Sunshine Quality Solutions. Super Chevy Dealers. And Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. Get ready to talk Tigers with producer Andre Champagne and our host, Todd Horn, Jeff Palermo, and Glenn Gilbo.
Two great players that are better people than they are players.
This is Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
And welcome to the second hour of Tiger Rag Radio. Jeff Palermo, news and sports director of the Louisiana Radio Network, along with the executive editor for Tiger Rag Magazine, Todd Horn, and Andre Champagne, our producer tonight. Final show of the 2025 season, and we have one more hour to go. And we have a great guest here to lead off hour number two. That is Nick Bromberg, senior writer for Yahoo Sports. Nick, happy new year. Thanks a lot for joining us on Tiger Rag Radio. How you doing tonight?
Hey, great. Happy New Year to all. Thanks. It feels like the season flew by this year, even though we still got, you know, three rounds of the college football playoff to go.
Well, the real season for LSU begins on Friday, and that's why we got you on, Nick, because give us your thoughts on how this is going to look on Friday, because this is my feeling, and maybe you could tell me if I'm wrong here, but when the portal window opens, and I don't know if it's at 12:01 a.m. on Friday, or I don't know if there's an exact time on Friday, January 2nd, but I have a feeling this is going to look a lot like NFL free agency and NBA free agency, where a lot of guys right off the bat get into the portal and immediately commit somewhere. Is that what you're anticipating, Nick? Because I feel like there's been a lot of agent discussion with football programs, and a lot of these decisions have already been made.
You know, that was the comp I was going to use myself. It does feel like we're going to be in that, what is it called in the NFL, the legal tampering period? Obviously, in college sports at this point, we don't even know what's legal and even it is and isn't legal coming to tampering. But you're right, especially with all the quarterbacks. I mean, it felt like going back to basically the end of the regular season, as soon as season was over, quarterback after quarterback expected to enter the portal. You know, a guy like Trinidad Chambliss, for example, it depends on if his season ends on Thursday night, and also with the waiver going forward, he's going to probably have to be in limbo a little bit. But, you know, for guys like Dylan Raiola, Rocco Beck, you know, you can go down the list of quarterbacks, I think we're going to know pretty early over the weekend where they're headed and going to play in 2026.
Hey, Nick, this is Todd. Can you, for me, sort of continue that characterization? You were kind of going down that path. You know, this is the fifth full year of the transfer portal as we know it, but there have been some changes in it this year that are going to impact that timeline and that frenzy. But, and I realize this is kind of complicated, but can you go back to 2021, say when Brian Kelly was just hired at LSU, and the different changes that have occurred in the transfer portal over those 5 years?
Yeah, you know, the big thing right now, you know, let's just say Lane Kiffin to Brian Kelly. The biggest contrast here is that Lane Kiffin is not going to have a spring to evaluate his roster and then say, I need to reload at this position, this position, this position, and then go get guys who have said, maybe I'm not going to find the playing time I want at their schools after spring practice. You know, now we've got – Lane Kiffin's got 2 weeks. Coaches around the country have 2 weeks to say, this is what I'm going to do for my roster in 2026, and I can't make any changes, which is why players have been so proactive in December in saying, I'm going to transfer because I need to get signed right away. And so that, to me, is the most fascinating part, is it's how quickly are coaches going to work, especially with the signing period still to come for those few players who didn't sign out of high school. And the early signing period is, you've really got to remake your roster here in this 2 weeks, because you're not going to have that second opportunity that coaches and players had for the previous 4 years after spring practice. So to me, you know, we're going to look at this frenzy over the next 48, 72 hours, but then how many players are potentially going to say, okay, look, my coach, my team, they went out and signed two or three guys at my position. I'm going to jump into the portal late in the transfer window, because you still can sign after the portal window closes as long as you're in the portal. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be an absolutely fascinating dynamic now that, you know, for lack of a better term, the transfer calendar has been streamlined, but we don't know how this is all going to work, because we've been living in a world where players have had two opportunities to transfer.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. I feel like I'm flip-flopping around here, and I apologize for that. But, you know, like you pointed out, in the past, there was very little tampering, so to speak. If there was tampering, it was on the down low. Right now, it seems to be, like you said, just out there in the world, and everybody's talking about it, you know. But they technically, they're not supposed to be talking to their agents aren't supposed to be talking to other teams until January 2nd when it opens.
Exactly. You know, we're living in a world, and, you know, it's more right now of an issue in basketball. Obviously, the big hot-button issue right now is James Nagy signs with Baylor after he was drafted 3 years ago, I believe, in the NBA draft, had been playing overseas, and now he's going to be a midseason signee for Baylor. I know that's not an apples-to-apples comparison for football, because you really can't take what's happening in basketball and other sports and put it into football, just given the way that football operates. But I do think it's a symbol, especially with what the NCAA said Monday night, basically saying, you know, we need Congress to act here. And it really does feel like that the NCAA is, I don't know if paralyzed is the right term, but they really need Congress. They really want Congress to do anything. And now, you know, we can argue in circles for days about whether federal intervention in college sports is a good idea or not. And I think there's a lot of ways we can go about it, how it could be done, and is it actually going to be a priority for Congress in 2026? I'm not totally sure. We've had, I don't know how many bills we've talked about over the last 2 years that simply have not come to fruition or have not made it past committee. So until we actually have something solid in Congress, the NCAA isn't going to get close to that antitrust legislation that it wants. And until that happens, I don't necessarily see an NCAA willing to step up and actually enforce the rules that are on the books or even make new rules regarding the transfer portal. And so it feels like they let the horse out of the barn when the portal started in 2021. And things, I think, have kind of, I don't want to say have gotten worse, but they have blossomed from there. And I think that mushrooming is going to continue for as long as it takes until Congress acts, because the NCAA does not seem like it wants to do it on its own.
As a consequence of that, Nick, do you believe, like LSU right now, you know, the portal for these guys doesn't open until January 2nd. They can't declare, but they've all, there's six offensive linemen for LSU, who, you know, it was a horrible offensive line this year, and they had no running game, very little pass protection. They scored horribly in terms of their grades. But yet they're all declaring that they're going to enter the portal. Could a lot of that just be, hey, you know, I just want to see what I'm worth?
Exactly. You want to see what you're worth. And you also, too, you know, you look at the SEC scholarship the adjustments going from 85 to 105. And Steve Sarkisian, I think, gave a very good answer today about how that impacts everything, is that there's still only so much money you can draw from. Sure, it's great now that SEC schools can have 20 more scholarships, but then where's the money coming from to pay those players who are on the scholarships? And if you want an 87th player, an 88th player, a guy who's going to be a depth piece, how much can you give him, and are you giving him money that would come at the cost of potentially paying a higher-end offensive lineman, in LSU's case, if you need that, or a position player at another school? So, you know, playing this balance is going to be very difficult for coaches, I think, over the next – especially now that there's only 2 weeks that they have to do this. And then also, too, you know, for a player, you can say, hey, look, I want to see what I'm worth on the open market, because as we've seen – even before the portal is opened and players who are now staying at their schools. It's now not, I am not entering the portal and I'm staying at school XYZ for my junior or senior year. It is the player has re-signed with the school for 2026. I think that is still language for me. I've been operating in this business for a long time. I'm still having to wrap my head around the use of the word re-signed when it comes to college football players.
So with these are more than nuances. These are substantial changes in the mentality and the approach towards the transfer portal because of the lack of legislation, like you pointed out earlier. How does that bode for Lane Kiffin, who is expected, you know, he's the portal king. He's got that reputation from building programs year in and year out at Ole Miss, primarily through the transfer portal. He comes to LSU. He does not have 2, 3, even 4 years to build a program. He's got to make a transition right away, and yet he's faced with all these nuances. Can he and his staff already have their roster pretty much carved out, know who they want, where they want to go, and start to wrap this up in the first couple of days of the transfer portal, or is this going to likely draw out through January and into February for LSU?
I think it has to be a drawn-out process for LSU because, I mean, I think Lane Kiffin has been the absolute one of the best, if not the best, coach when it comes to adapting to the new world of college football and what they were able to do with the support of the collective they had at Ole Miss to get the transfers that they had to power that team into the college football playoff. But, you know, it is a huge task, especially when you have an offensive staff that is still currently coaching at Ole Miss and preparing for a playoff game, to identify every single player on your roster and know that this is what we need to do right away. Obviously, you have your priorities. You want to keep your top recruits, your high school recruits. You want to keep that recruiting class intact. You know where you want to go in the portal. But I do think it is going to be the drawn-out process where, you know, Trinidad Chambliss said today, you know, he has not talked to Lane, and he doesn't think it's even allowed at this point. But for a guy like him where he's going to be waiting on a sixth year, and going back to the lack of rules for the NCAA, I'm not going to be surprised if and when he gets that sixth year of eligibility, because if Diego Pavi can get it for being JUCO, I'm not necessarily sure there's not going to be the loophole there from going from Division II to Division I to get the same treatment for Chambliss. So then Chambliss is going to have a decision of, do I follow Lane Kiffin to LSU and can be that bridge quarterback for the Tigers in 2026, or do I stick it around in Oxford? And then if Chambliss gets the extra year and he sticks around in Oxford, then Austin Simmons has a decision to make. It just feels there's going to be a lot of dominoes here, and I just don't necessarily know how soon that Chambliss' situation is going to be resolved.
Well, since we're talking about Chambliss and we're talking about the LSU quarterback situation, right now LSU, as we speak, has one scholarship quarterback on its roster, and that, of course, is Michael Van Buren, who – started the last 5 games of the year, including the bowl game, but he didn't really do anything to distinguish himself as a potential starter. Now, he has had conversations with Kiffin and his staff, supposedly, but is it realistic for LSU to be able to go into this portal and bring in 2 or 3 different quarterbacks?
I think so, because, you know, you look at Lane Kiffin did the same thing at Ole Miss. You know, we look at the name is escaping me at the moment, but everybody's going to know who I'm talking about. He started at Oklahoma State for 2 or 3 years, signed for his final season of eligibility at Ole Miss, and spent it as a backup. Lane Kiffin has signed multiple quarterbacks in the portal, and I think he has to, because can you view Van Buren as your floor guy and say, look, we want to keep you on the roster, we want to keep you around, but we're also going to look for other options. And for a guy like Van Buren, is that an appealing option to say that, you know, maybe I'm going to end up being the second or third guy on the roster when it all is said and done? So, yes, I do totally expect LSU to add multiple quarterbacks. It's just a matter of, do we have a clear-cut number one choice, or are we going to try to bring in guys of similar talent levels and have an actual legitimate competition going into the 2026 season?
Hey, Nick. Thank you for that. We're going to keep Nick through the break here, and we'll have more transfer portal discussion when we come back inside the Super Chevy Dealer Studio. Stay with us.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with five available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious. With multiple engine options and impressive towing, while Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability.
Nice.
Making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. My brother and I grow rice, soybeans, and raise crawfish on our farm in Evangeline Parish. For a fourth-generation farmer like myself, Louisiana Farm Bureau is as much a part of my life as checking traps or harvesting rice. Our organization is more than 145,000 members strong, and we've been around for more than 100 years. The Louisiana Farm Bureau spans generations, and we want you to join our family.
Visit LAFarmBureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Now more Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
We're back here on Tiger Rag Radio inside the Super Chevy Dealer Studio as we bring back Yahoo Sports College Football senior writer Nick Bromberg. There were 4,400 in the portal last year with two portal windows. How many players do you expect in this window, Nick, with just the January period, now that that's changed?
I think we're probably going to end up looking at about the same number. Very well could be more than that. But right now, you know, given the fact that players only have one opportunity, we're probably going to, I would say, the number is going to end up being about 4,000 to 4,500. And then I think the fascinating thing to me is how many players enter the portal and then end up staying at their own schools, or how many have to end up transferring down a level. Because I do think there are going to be guys who enter the portal thinking that they have better prospects somewhere else and those opportunities don't dry up, or do dry up, and then they have to look for some place to play, whether it's going from a Power 5 school to a lower Group of 5 school, or even all the way down to maybe the FCS level.
So, Nick, from the LSU perspective, have you had a chance to, I mean, they're basically rebuilding their entire roster, but are there specific position groups that you're hearing about LSU needing, or that they could be attracting certain types of players, position group players, you know, like quarterback we talked about, offensive line we kind of touched on, anything else, or are those the two most prominent ones?
Those, I think, are the two of the bigger ones. What I'm fascinated by is Lane Kiffin has had a fantastic track record of bringing transfer wide receivers in at Ole Miss, and I do not – I mean, I anticipate that continuing at LSU. I do think he's going to snag one of the best wide receivers out there, if not a multiple of them, because of what we've seen at LSU and how receiver-friendly his offensive system is. He's a – you know, we've Trey Harris in the NFL. He produces NFL players at wide receiver. And I also do think that – you know, we saw what the quickest path to legitimate contention was for LSU over the last few seasons, for Ole Miss the last few seasons with Lane Kiffin, and that was loading up transfers on the defensive front. I think the Tigers should be very active in that space, because just look at not only what Kiffin did at Ole Miss, but also look at what Texas Tech has done. Texas Tech is now a legitimate national championship threat, going from one of the worst defenses in college football last year to one of the absolute best by simply spending that money that they had from Cody Campbell and others on the defensive line and creating one of the most dominant defensive lines in college football.
Nick, a few weeks ago we had LSU Athletic Director Virg Ausberry on the show, and he talked about the importance of bringing kids in through the transfer portal that not only are obviously good players that can fill in specific holes that you need, but also bringing in players from winning programs that have that winning mentality. Have you noticed anything about Kiffin's ability to do that in the past?
You know, yeah, he can find, and he's also found, you know, a group of five players who have played at winning programs. You come in and they turned Ole Miss into a title contender. I do think that is an absolute thing you have to look for, is you don't necessarily want a player who's maybe a star on a bad program. If you can find a good player who was on a very good program and then turn him into a great player at a great program, that is how you build a championship contender. And as you know, you look at LSU, there's going to be plenty of players out there. And with the money that LSU is going to have to spend, I necessarily don't know if LSU is going to be – the goal is obviously the college football playoff in year one. Is that a little too unrealistic? I'm not totally sure, but I think 2027 and beyond, you absolutely have to think SEC title contention and college football playoff contention on a regular basis.
So you mentioned money, and obviously one of the reasons that Lane Kiffin said that he was really attracted to LSU was not just because of the fertile recruiting base, but also because of the commitment – that the LSU program and the boosters have to this roster, guaranteeing him $25 to $30 million every season to build this roster. Obviously, a lot of that translates to the transfer portal, especially this year for LSU. They're even talking about LSU may have more than that because the enthusiasm has been so rampant among the boosters here at LSU that they think they have – are they reportedly have more than $30 million, upwards to $35 million. How competitive is that in today's environment?
It's super competitive, and I still think, you know, we have to sit there and take those numbers with a grain of salt and say maybe they're actually going to be a little bit more on the back end because, you know, we talk about everything, that the roster caps, you have the salary caps, some of the revenue caps, but all the talk about teams are exceeding that because, again, as we went back in the last segment of the NCAA's lack of enforcement, lack of ability to enforce the rules, I think we're simply looking at a situation here where if a team that has all the resources like LSU, like a Texas, like any other SEC program in the top dollar Big Ten program, they are going to be able to continue to spend. And even though we're in this revenue sharing era, that the gap, I do think, is going to still grow between those really financially resourceful teams and those that don't necessarily have that money.
Hey, thanks, Nick, for joining us today. When we come back, we'll have LSU Radio women's basketball play-by-play commentator Patrick Wright to talk a little women's hoops from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio. This is Tiger Rag Radio.
I'm Richard Funtenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. For more than 100 years, Louisiana Farm Bureau has been the voice of Louisiana agriculture. Louisiana Farm Bureau advocates on behalf of all the farmers and ranchers across our great state. What that really means is we advocate for you to ensure we have the safest, most abundant, and affordable food supply in the world. Louisiana Farm Bureau is 145,000 members strong, and we want you to join the Louisiana Farm Bureau family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability.
Nice.
Making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your Super Chevy dealers today.
Tiger Rag Radio is back, live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
We're back here on Tiger Rag Radio. Great stuff there from Nick Bromberg from Yahoo Sports, who joined us early on in this hour. And again, for those that are just joining us, if you want to catch any of our shows, you can listen along at anywhere you get your podcasts. We put the show in a podcast form. Also, it's available on YouTube as well. Jeff Palermo, along with Todd Horn and Andre Champagne, who covers LSU women's basketball for TigerRag.com. Joining us now, we're inside the Super Chevy Dealer Studio, and joining us now, it's the voice of the Lady Tigers, Patrick Wright, fifth-ranked LSU women's basketball team, opening up SEC play against 11th-ranked Kentucky on New Year's night, 7 o'clock, LSU 14-0. They've scored 100 points or more in 11 of their games. Most of their games have been blowouts. Patrick Wright, you've had to have a lot of filler material by your side during these broadcasts to fill out the entire 40 minutes.
Yeah, but it's time. Time to see what it looks like for real. And we get a pretty good test coming in here in Kentucky on Thursday night.
Patrick, you've been covering this team for years. You've got tons of experience and probably extra added insight into Coach Mulkey and the staff. This is arguably her most talented team ever. you know, you could say 2023 obviously is right up there, but now, like you said, it's about to get really serious in the next 18 days, starting January 1st. They play number 12 Kentucky, then number 11 Vanderbilt, then Georgia, number 2 Texas, and then Oklahoma on the 18th. That's a gauntlet like maybe you've never even seen.
No, and this league is so much better than it was when Coach Mulkey started. You know, that first year when we finished right at the top of the league, only really behind South Carolina, there weren't a whole lot of outstanding teams besides South Carolina, Tennessee, and then LSU. Of course, Texas wasn't in the league yet. Oklahoma wasn't in the league yet. And a lot of teams that are really good right now weren't very good then. So this will be by far and away the biggest run of gauntlet is the good word, just because the league is so good from top to bottom, plus the addition of Texas and Oklahoma. But I don't think it is arguable. This is her most talented team, just from 1 to 11. Yeah, Angel Reese is probably the best player, but there's just no drop off on her bench. The only thing that's a little concerning right now is some of these kids are young. You know, how will they react in their, you know, when they go through league play? I thought the game at Duke was a good test. For example, Zakiya Johnson got off to just a really rough start, only played 4 minutes. We never saw her again in that game, and she's played well since. But Grace Knox on the road at Duke got off to a great start and was very good for LSU. So the question will be that the young kids, will they need a little time to kind of figure it out, or will they just acclimate themselves very quickly? And again, the first step to answering that comes on Thursday night with a very good Kentucky team that is a old team. Lots of seniors, a lot of them are transfers, but a lot of college basketball has been played by their team. So that's a little bit of an advantage to Kentucky there, I think.
With all the freshmen stepping up and really seemingly up to this point maturing as fastly as they have, or as fast as they have, Kim has resorted to this mass substitution, you know, starting the starting five, which she switched up a little bit, but then immediately substituting five in and then interchanging them throughout the course of the rest of the game, but sort of sticking to that first few minutes of the of each quarter with one lineup, then switching to a whole nother lineup, you know, halfway through that quarter. Do you think that'll continue in SEC play, or was that just her figuring things out?
No, I think that's probably pretty much done at this point with the game set to be much more competitive. I think you'll start to see a normal rotation pattern. I mean, I think you're going to get full Wiley into the game pretty quickly, you know, regardless of who she will come in for. And I think now you'll kind of see it that she'll coach more by feel. You know, if she sees somebody struggling, she'll bring them out. If somebody's on a hot streak, she'll leave them in. So I think, you know, unless – and again, I, as you look up and down the schedule, it's hard to find any teams that you figure LSU is going to be, you know, a 30, 40, 50-point winner against in this league. Everybody's pretty good. So I think unless she's particularly unhappy with an entire group, I think we're just going to see normal substitution patterns from here on out.
Do you think this team is going to be able to maintain its ability to shoot the ball the way it has? It's been a great outside shooting team. It's been a great inside shooting team. The post has been phenomenal early on.
I think it's going to be a little more difficult. You know, the Kentucky team that's coming here, they have not played a super tough schedule either. However, they're holding their opponents to 50 points a game. Their only opponents are only shooting 31%, and they're only 27% on threes. LSU's last couple of games, we have not shot well from the three. But this offense is good enough that, and you now have that inside-outside game that, you know, since you've got a true face-up post in Koval, and you've got some other posts who can do a lot of different things, I don't think LSU's going to have difficulty finding good shots. It might be a little harder now, but I don't see anybody able to slow this offense down and hold them to, you know, 60, 65 points in a game. I think the shots are going to be there. tomorrow they've got a 6'5 center in Clara. On Thursday in Clara Strack, who's blocked 43 shots. So that's going to be something you got to deal with. And there's going to be those spread out through the conference season. We haven't really seen players like that, so it's going to be tougher. I don't expect LSU to shoot 55% in league play, but can they be in the upper 40s? I definitely think so, and that'll put them toward the top of the league.
Are you concerned about the fact that throughout this 14-0 start, they've faced very little adversity and how they are going to respond? Because there will be adversity.
Not really. I think the Duke game, even though it was just one game, I thought was a great test to that. You know, we got punched in the mouth very quickly, and there was no sense of panic. No, everybody, you know, Full Wiley came in, changed the game, and everything worked out fine. I think there's enough, even though there's some young players on this team, you got enough veterans like Flaje Johnson and Michaela Williams, and Full Wiley herself, even though it's her first year here, she's played a lot of ball also. I think you've got a calming influence that if things are going rough, you got enough players who can just settle them down and say, look, we got this, we'll take care of it.
Hey, Patrick, this is Andre. You've been able to see Jada Richard kind of grow from that first-year point guard to now. What kind of strides have you seen her make as far as facilitating this offense?
Well, and especially because Kim puts so much emphasis on having a good point guard and making the right plays.
Yeah, it's hard to quantify. If you look at the stats, like, well, she's not scoring a ton of points. She's not necessarily getting a ton of assists. But what she is doing is she is getting the ball into the front court, getting people where they need to be, and then she's getting the ball to, you know, say to Michaela or to Flaje, who then kind of create. It's mainly about her not turning the ball over as well. She has been very good at keeping track of the ball. That was a little bit of an issue as a freshman. And then she is also, I think, doing a good job. She does. You're not going to need her, I don't think, to score a ton of points. But if you can get 6, 8, 10 points out of her on a night, she's doing a better job of picking her shots right now, and Coach loves that.
Patrick, should be fun. It all gets started Thursday, New Year's Day night against 11th-ranked Kentucky, and then LSU will be on the road to take on 12th-ranked Vanderbilt on Sunday. Happy New Year, my friend. We'll be chatting a lot in 2026.
All right, same to you guys. Thanks a lot.
Voice of the Lady Tigers, Patrick Wright. We'll have Michael Bonnet, LSU Sports Information Director. He'll join us in the next segment as this is Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Tiger Rag Radio is back on the air, live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Hey, we're back here on Tiger Rag Radio. Jeff Palermo, along with the executive editor for Tiger Rag Magazine, Todd Horn, and Andre Champagne. It's now time to bring in the longtime sports information director for LSU. That is Michael Bonnet. And Michael, thanks a lot for spending some time with us. Happy New Year. How you doing?
Good, good. Sorry I missed my early slot. I got my times mixed up. My apologies.
That's okay. A lot going on with LSU. Obviously, with a new football coach, and you got the winter sports really rocking and rolling, and conference play set to begin for men's and women's basketball. But I know you've only had a chance to work with Lane Kiffin for a few weeks now, but what's it like working with the Lane train, and when do you get access to all his social media channels, you know, and so that you can start going crazy on there?
Yeah, so, you know, it's been great. You know, I haven't spent a lot of time with him, but the time I have spent with him has been good. You know, I'm looking forward to this next chapter, and he's obviously going to bring a lot of excitement and offense. I think everyone is excited about what we could potentially do on the offensive side of the ball, combined with what Blake Baker's done defensively. It could be a really special beginning of something very special here. So I know that our fans are excited. We've had really the number of ticket requests have been through the roof, and it's been unlike anything we've seen in a long, long time.
Michael, hey, you know, you and I go way, way back. We went to back when we were both students at LSU and working in various forms of media at LSU. And, you know, in the last 25 years, you started with Nick Saban. You then had Les Miles, then Ed Ogeron, Brian Kelly for 4 years. now Lane Kiffin, and I know you hadn't had a lot of time with Lane Kiffin, but what are the differences between those two coaches, those five coaches, that stand out the most for you right now at this early stage with Lane?
Todd, you cut out right there at the end of your question when you asked me, right before you said something about the five coaches, what stands out?
Yeah, the differences between the five coaches. I know it's early with Lane, but just demonstrative differences.
Yeah, you know, Nick was so Nick, you know, that was my first coach in the job for the first time. So, you know, everything was so new, and Nick was new. Obviously to LSU, and you know, he was and so I was just learning my job and dealing with Nick, and you know, he taught me a lot. You know, he obviously had his way of doing things. He was obviously very successful, and he taught me a lot. He taught me you know, how to run my office. Not that he told me what to do, but I watched him run his football staff and his program, and it helped me be better at what I did. You know, Les took over and did a great job. And, you know, he had huge shoes to fill with coming in after Nick. And Les was, you know, he said a lot of crazy things, some goofy things, but I enjoyed my time with him. He obviously had great success and, you know, won a lot of football games, won a national title and played for another one. And, you know, who can deny what Ed did in 2019?
Right.
You know, he took over for Les and during the 2016 season, and really took a team that was could have gone either way, and really galvanized that team and did a great job of the stretch, and ended up getting the job on a full-time basis. And then, you know, 2 years later, we have arguably the greatest season in college football history. So, and then BK, you know, I don't think BK was very understood very well here. You know, that people say he didn't fit in. I had a great relationship with Coach Kelly. You know, he treated me with great respect, and we got along fine. It took a little while to get to know him. You know, the transition is difficult, especially when you have an interim coach, as we did when Coach Kelly came in with Brad Davis. And then we had the same thing with Frank and with Lane. So, you know, now that the 2025 season's over and we turn our attention to the transfer portal here on Friday and the next, you know, couple weeks, it's going to be obviously very exciting. I'll get to spend a lot more time with Lane. But, you know, I've watched him from afar, and I think Jeff had mentioned something about his social media. He's a great follower on social media. You know, he's fun. He's entertaining. He's funny, philosophical. He, you know, it's really, I've enjoyed following him on Twitter and Instagram. So, yeah, I mean, every one of them is different, and the circumstances about how they got here were different. You know, I'm just lucky to be along for the ride, and, you know, I'm going to enjoy this. I thought Coach Kelly, you know, when he signed that contract, who would have thought that it would have been a 4 years? I thought that potentially, you know, he would have ended up being the last coach I work with, but that's not the case. And so we're all on board the Lane train, and we're very excited about it.
Michael, were you shocked by the how quickly things turned for Brian there, starting October 26th and then through the next week? And have you ever been through a time period like that in your tenure here?
Well, no. I mean, we've been through a lot here, so nothing surprises me in college athletics anymore. But I think we all had a sense when that A&M game turned the way it did, and their fans took over Tiger Stadium. It was, you just had a feeling something was, you know, about to happen. I don't know what that was, but something was going to happen.
Michael, could you hold on through the break here? I'd like to take you to the end of the show here at 8 o'clock.
Yeah,
if you
sure.
Just had a few more minutes. Okay. All right. We're talking with Sports Information Director for the LSU Athletic Program, Michael Bonnet. Just a few more minutes with him as we wrap up the 2025 year of Tiger Rag Radio when we come back from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with five available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious. With multiple engine options and impressive towing, while Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability.
Nice.
Making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
Live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio, we're back to Tiger Rag Radio.
Just a few more minutes left to go in this show, and we got Sports Information Director Michael Bonnet on the air with us. And, Michael, one of the themes of Lane Kiffin, and we were talking about him on social media, he uses the hashtag just different, describing LSU. LSU, it seems, and maybe because we're all here in this LSU bubble, but it seems to me that no one has done a better job, no athletic program, and I'm not just saying this because you're on the airways with us, but I really do believe this, has done a better job in marketing its athletic program here. The term, the brand is used a lot for LSU. And granted, I think in this time of when NIL really first got going and players were able to really market themselves, you had two outstanding student athletes that can lead that charge in Livy Dunn and Angel Reese. And I think even to a sense, Joe Burrow before that in 2019, I mean, there was so much interest around him. But give us an idea, and I know we only have a couple minutes here, but how LSU has been able to take that, what was started with people like Livy and even Flaje Johnson and Angel and Joe, and really have used it for all of the sports programs at LSU.
Yeah, you know, it starts with having a great staff. But before that, though, you got to have great student athletes who garner national attention. We've been very fortunate to have some of the most popular student athletes nationally that helped us, and they came, as you mentioned, they came along at just the right time. So we took advantage of that, and you got to have a great staff, and it starts at the top with Zach Greenwell, who's our deputy AD for external affairs. And you know, he came in, he's been here almost a couple of years now, and you know, it's a concerted effort to you know, make the LSU brand the best in college sports. And, you know, when you win a national title in 2019, gymnastics wins, baseball wins, women's basketball wins, there are not many schools that can claim that. And so you're able to leverage that success and across these social media platforms. And you know, the reality is social media is where everyone gets their news now for the most part. And Brandon Berrio, who oversees our social efforts for football and then the rest of our sports, does a great job with that. And yeah, we've been very fortunate to have some really good teams along with just some outstanding student athletes, high character and entertaining. Flaje, you know, I mean, we've been very lucky. So, you know, we have tons of literally millions of followers, and we're able to leverage that from sport to sport. So that's beneficial to us, but you know, it's a concerted effort. We want to be the best, obviously on the field, but we want to also be the best, when it comes to marketing and branding our sports, our student athletes, our coaches, and, our crew's done a great job of doing that.
Michael, you know, when you talk about all the great players, we kind of left Jaden Daniels out of that mix, and he kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, yeah. And he had one of the most phenomenal years in the history of college football. How do you adjust to that as it's happening?
Well, you know, so yes, it was a you know, Jaden was at Arizona State. He was a sought after quarterback, but you know, he really emerged in his 2 years under Denbrock and Sloan here. And you just ride that wave. Unfortunately, our defense wasn't in place, so we really could have done something special with him at quarterback. But, yeah, I mean, you know, Jaden was great. And to win a Heisman and be the number two overall draft pick, that's something we continue to promote and publicize because,
it helps the program in so many ways.
Yeah, got to get him healthy next season, that's for sure. Yeah. Hey, Michael, thanks a lot. Happy New Year. Should be a lot of fun with the Lane Train. We'll talk again soon.
All right, thank you, guys. Happy New Year.
All right, that does it for the 2025 Tiger Rag Radio. We'll be back, and it'll be even better in 2026. For Andre Todd, I'm and Glenn, and I'm Jeff Palermo. Thanks again for listening, and from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio, have a great night and a happy New Year.
Tiger Rag is everywhere, online at tigerrag.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/TigerRag Magazine or follow us on Twitter at Tiger_Rag.